All right. Well, I have a special surprise. It's a privilege for me to invite Brian McFadden onto the show today. Brian is the co-host, I guess, of the Pigskin Party podcast. And he was nice enough to invite me onto his show a couple of weeks ago to talk postseason and the Raiders and so on. And so I'm very happy to have a home and home with him and invite him on. So, Brian, before we get into the football discussion, why don't you give a little introduction and let everybody know who you are and where they can find you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris. First, I want to say thanks for bringing me on. Had a great time having you on my show. So super excited to get a chance to come on yours as well. As you mentioned, my podcast is called the Pigskin Party Podcast. We recently rebranded. And so it is an NFL podcast, but we throw in a little bit of pop culture, a little bit of fun, a little bit of random. We drop two episodes a week. One is just NFL centered, and the second is what we call it, the flavor of the week. So it could be something different.
Oh, nice.
Last week we dropped an extra NFL episode. It was Super Bowl week. So our second episode was, like, we talked about the Deshaun Watson, possible destinations for him. But this week, we recorded yesterday, we'll drop later this week, we talked about drumming. So you never know what you're going to find. But the thing I love the most is talking football. So being on here with you talking about the NFL season that was, couldn't be more excited.
All right. Well, great. Well, it's great to have you here. And you are actually officially our first guest. So that's pretty exciting, too. So
nice. Thanks.
And speaking of speaking of rebranding, we went through that same thing a couple of years ago. So, good luck to you and all that. Hopefully your fans. I think you have a much more loyal fan base than we do, so I imagine everybody's going to stick with you, no problem.
Yeah, it's been good so far.
All right. Well, let's not dilly-dally any further. The Super Bowl happened a couple of days ago, and obviously there have been a lot of thoughts, a lot of discussion pieces, and so on and so forth. Just for everybody that, in case you hadn't, if you've forgotten already, the Bucks really whipped up on the Chiefs, 31-9. The Bucks held the Chiefs out of the end zone for, I think, the first time in Patrick Mahomes' career. I can't remember, since his rookie year anyway. So it was just a real surprising beatdown, to be sure. So, Brian, just initial thoughts from you. Like, what did you, what were you thinking going into the game? And, certainly, to say it was a surprise, I think, would be an understatement. But what do you think surprised you most, more than anything else?
Well, I, all season on my show, had been saying that I will not pick against the Chiefs as long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy. And so naturally, I kept with my word and I picked Kansas City to win this game. One of the things I pointed out, and I'm not alone, a lot of analysts pointed out, as a key to this game was the weakness of the Chiefs' offensive line, specifically with the injuries they've had. They lost Derek Fisher in the championship game. Mitchell Schwartz had been out, so their two basically all-pro level tackles were not available in this game. And the way the Bucks' defensive line had played, especially in the playoffs, they had just terrorized Aaron Rodgers. Like, that was kind of the key factor. But I don't think any of us expected to the degree of how much of an impact that would actually have. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, this is a real stat. He racked up 497 yards total just running around. Like, total, I mean, it doesn't count as scrimmage yards because he's running, but 497 yards covered in that game, and he was pressured on over 50% of his pass plays, which is the most in Super Bowl history. I mean, this guy, it doesn't matter if you're Patrick Mahomes, and he made some insane plays that didn't come through, but if you're running for your life, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, I mean, and I think to that end, the refrain I heard quite consistently, and I think it makes a lot of sense, is that there was no adjustment in the game. And, just as a kind of a strange connection, I saw a video by this vlogger, Brett Coleman, who does a lot of really great...
Yep, I'm familiar with Brett.
A lot of okay, so you know Brett. Yeah. So for anybody who's not familiar, he does a lot of great videotape analysis and that kind of videotape. and he actually has like a really amazing, what's the word? Way of jinxing. His jinx level is super Sports Illustrated cover level jinx and Madden level. So he put out a video about how Patrick Mahomes' like foot injury made him that much more dangerous or something like that. And then, of course, they go and get blown out. And in any case, the reason that I bring it up is because he was talking at one point about how Patrick Mahomes is starting like way he would start behind the line and then run backwards.
Right.
You know, and it happened against your Dolphins, I believe. They had it was 30-yard sack or something like that. Yeah. You know, and it was basically
one of the only Dolphins
thing,
highlights from that game.
Yeah, right. But in any case, you know, and it, that was like very regular. It seemed like, well, you know, probably four or five times it seemed like that happened during this game. And, you know, just to connect it back, the thing that didn't happen that I was surprised by was the complete lack of adjustment by the Chiefs offense.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think that what was especially surprising was when the Chiefs came out at halftime and they started running the ball and they were getting, you know, 6-8 yards a clip, it seemed like. And then they had like, okay, we'll do those four runs, get them on their heels, and then we'll go back to whatever was not working before. That was the part that really caught me off guard. So yeah, that I that was a great stat, Brian. I had not heard that one before about the yards that he covered. That is really quite amazing. I fully believe it because he had 30 yards running backwards on a couple of plays,
right,
it seemed like.
And you hit the nail spot on there. And I mentioned this actually, as I mentioned, we recorded our show yesterday. It'll drop. Actually, it dropped today. The Super Bowl recap was not the fact that we knew their offensive line would be bad, not to this level, but we knew there would be issues with that pressure. But Mahomes has faced pressure before and usually does something insane. Yeah. But on top of the fact that he did have some drops, Tyreek Hill dropped a pass. I mean, it was a long pass, but he still dropped a catchable ball in the end zone. Kelsey had a drop. Was the fact that there was no adjustment. And they have played games this season where teams took away the deep ball. And that's what Todd Bowles and the Bucks defense did this game is they doubled Tyreek Hill. They played a lot of two, sometimes three deep safeties. They refused to have a repeat of the game back in week 12 where Tyreek Hill had like 200 yards at the end of the first quarter. They refused to get beat deep. So clearly that YOLO Patrick Mahomes scrambling, making a play wasn't going to work this time, but instead of adjusting as they have in other games where maybe they go more to the run game, and you're right, at the beginning of the second half, Clyde Edwards-Helaire actually looked studly. He had a couple gashing runs, made some really nice moves, and then that was it. It was three or four plays, and then they went back to what they were doing. And an interesting question to ask about why, because Andy Reid, nobody questioned Andy Reid's coaching, especially offensive play calling at this point, but the tragedy with his son, Brett Reid, and the car accident that he got in where he had been drinking, went to the hospital. There's a 5-year-old who's in critical condition. There's an investigation underway. The question was, does that affect him? They even asked in the pregame, does that affect you? And no, the game plan's already in place. Fine. But the adjusting part of it, if you're not all the way there mentally, if your son is going through, you know, what Andy is going through with his son, Brett, who was also in, you know, one of the assistant coaches,
right?
Maybe that's what prevented him, because they didn't change anything. They really didn't. They should have thrown more screens. They should have thrown more quick slants, anything to get the ball out quickly from Mahomes, because it was clear that they had like a second before that entire offensive line was crumbling, and they just didn't make the adjustments. And that was the part that maybe surprised me the most.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, Brian. I am glad you did, because I had been thinking about that as well. You know, it's just really hard to, you know, I think as a person, you know, you like to think that they're professionals and they can dissociate and things like that. But when you're, you know, your entire function on the field is mental, and you have some space that is dedicated or whatever, you're just kind of recovering from what you saw. It would not surprise me at all that was weighing on him in some way. Like, even if it's not, you know, he's not consciously thinking about it in the moment and things like that, you know, going in and going in with that concern, if you're in an anxious state, it is hard for you to adjust. And that, so it wouldn't surprise me at all that had an effect. So yeah, it is very strange. I think the other, you know, so just to switch gears a little bit, one of the other components that I thought about was, if you look back on the Bucks and their performance against the Saints, and then against the Packers, and then against the Chiefs, you know, one of the things that stood out was that they had a very, very consistent offensive performance. I should no, I should not discount the Washington football team, but that was much less, it seemed like, a challenge than the other teams. But
and surprisingly, that was the game they seemed to have the most trouble with, right?
right. That's true. That's a great point. But, you know, when I think about in the Saints game, people were saying, well, you know, Tom Brady didn't have a great game, and, you know, and they got lucky because Drew Brees really ran out of gas. And then in the Packers game, you know, they got lucky because of that last, you know, the last play before the first half ended. And, you know, and without that, and then the penalty calls and whatever.
Well, by the way, that's not lucky. That was a dime that Brady threw to Scotty Miller. That's not,
Sorry. No disrespect, but the point being that, like, the sequence of events there was they were going to punt, and then they decided to go for it, and then they got, you know, the exact coverage they needed, yeah, and correct. So on. But the point I'm sort of getting at is that they were, I think it would have been easy going into the game. And I think that's kind of how I look at it, is that, well, you know, Brady threw three picks against the Packers, right? And that, you know, if the Packers were able to put together, you know, a touchdown on that last drive or whatever it was, you know, they probably don't end up coming out of that game to the Bucks. And yet it was, you just look back and you think they were just 100% consistent. They were in, like, what, I think, I can't remember what the Saints game score was, but they had 29 against the Washington. Yeah. So there you go. So it was 29, 30, 31, yep. And then 31, just super, super consistent offensively. And it just required, you know, so even though Brady had, you know, I would say not great games, offensively anyway, just by, like, sort of standards, 300 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, he was still exactly what they needed to do, and the Bucks defense sort of did the rest. And so when I look back on it, I don't think anybody ever predicted a team to slow down Patrick Mahomes in the way that they did. But, you know, the connection, you know, and so that was kind of how I looked at it. It was like nobody was giving I think the Bucks offense like that much credit in all the way through, even though they had three straight games of, you know, 30-ish points every week in the playoffs.
Yeah. And it was, as I mentioned, it was just nothing that I think it was just an exaggerated. Everybody saw, oh, the pass rush could be a problem. Oh, but Patrick Mahomes will overcome it. You know, that was kind of the
right
presiding sentiment. And I shared the same thoughts. And we saw that even someone as great as Patrick Mahomes cannot overcome what he was facing. I mean, I rewatched the game. So I watched the game, obviously, live, Super Bowl Sunday, and I rewatched the game on Game Pass specifically because I wanted to watch the line. And I did. The whole game, I was focused on the line. And that poor offensive line was just, they stood no chance. Not just the two tackles, because Vita Vea, who is now 100% healthy, who had been injured and then came back against the Packers, but was a little bit limited, man, he would crumble the front of the line, push back the center and the guard, and then those two overmatched tackles stood no chance against Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. And it was just, it's not even like Mahomes could step up when the pressure came. He had nowhere to go but scramble for his life.
Right.
And there's not the greatest quarterbacks in the world can't overcome that.
That's right. So just kind of interesting, though, and then just a counter, I think, was that Brady wasn't really under very much pressure, I don't think.
No, he wasn't.
During that game. So just kind of interesting that, you know, because the Chiefs offensive line, or excuse me, defensive line is not, you know, they're nothing to be trifled with. So the fact that the Bucs offensive line stood up quite well, I think there was just one sack, was a great performance by them as well.
Well, there's an interesting wrinkle to that. So the Bucs have had one of the top, I'd say top five lines, if not higher, in the league all year. But I was listening to a podcast. I don't remember which one. One of the analysts actually said, pay attention to Ryan Jensen, the center for the Bucks, and he's a trash talker. He will try to get in Chris.
Oh yeah.
Try to get in Chris Jones's head. And what happened? He got a personal foul. He was, I remember thinking, like, oh, that's not going to happen. No, he did it. Chris Jones, it was a crucial 15 yard personal foul where he smacked Jensen in the helmet, and it was just like uncalled for. That was the thing. This Bucks offensive line, besides being great at protection and controlling the line of scrimmage in the run game too, I mean, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, they both had some great runs, is that they were in the head of that Chiefs defensive front. And really the superstar there is Chris Jones. And if Jones isn't going to make plays, the rest of that Chiefs defensive line is not good enough to step up.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a great point as well. So thank you for the analysis Brian, so just so going in, did you predict a blowout by the Chiefs, or did you expect it to be close?
I expected it to be close. I did pick the Chiefs to beat the spread, but like by a point. I think my prediction for a score was like 34-30. Once again, I figured the Bucks would score those 30 points, right? Figured the Chiefs would score more. And that was another one of the big surprises, that it was a blowout in the first place, and that the blowout wasn't in favor of the Chiefs. And you mentioned at the top of the show that the Chiefs didn't even score a touchdown. I mean, how is it? None of us thought that was even, even if they lose, it'll be a shootout, and maybe Brady gets the best of Mahomes at the end like he did in the 2018 AFC Championship game. But no, there was just three field goals, and that was it for this vaunted Chiefs offense. It was just no one saw it coming.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Sorry, I was getting a little bit of audio there, but I hope everybody was able to hear that okay. So, I don't even think there was a bet on the board that where you could pick the Chiefs to have, you know, zero touchdowns. That would have been quite a prop bet to come through.
Right.
You know, one other quick, just as an FYI, I think, I remember the Rams Patriots Super Bowl from a few years ago. Everybody was predicting like 56, 58, 60 points. And that was the case this year. And then you of course predicted 34-30. I thought it would be 27-24. But when it's that high, bet the other way. The total in this game ended up being at 40. That Rams Patriots one ended up being 16 was the total. So if you ever see like a lot of consistently high numbers, generally good idea to go the other way, but that's just, you know, all predictions wrong or your money back. So anyway, well, thank you very much for the analysis of the Super Bowl, Brian, but let's take a bit of a wider angle view and talk about the season in general. So before I get into that, I should point out that Brian's Dolphins vanquished my Raiders in one of the more miraculous finishes of the season. So, and they ended up finishing 9-7. So congrats to the Dolphins.
I mean, even if you're a Raiders fan, you got to admire that Fitz pass. I mean, who doesn't love Fitz magic at this point?
No, I do love Fitz magic, except when he's playing the Raiders and he somehow pulls that out. That was, I mean, I don't think he connects on that pass unless he gets the face.
Right.
Mask,
right? Yeah. You know, I'm going to have to agree with you there.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes had a similar pass in the Super Bowl, and I think Fitz magic did a better job on his because he connected. So, you know, give him
and Fitz couldn't see. At least Mahomes could see someone right. see his target. Right. Fitz was looking in 180 yeah, degrees exactly. backwards.
Right. So anyway, but let's take a longer, a wider angle lens of the 2020-2021 season in general. So Brian, what was your, I guess, overall, what were your predictions going into the season, and what do you feel like you were right on about, and what do you feel like you might've missed? And, you know, where do you think, from your perspective, you take in a lot of, expert opinion, a lot of information, like where do you feel like the experts got it right and wrong?
Well, I predicted the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl again from the start.
So close.
Yeah, right. I mean, watching the three of them play, Mahomes, Hill, and Kelce, is just incredible. And now we saw what it takes to stop them. But I think had Andy adjusted, the Chiefs probably could have still found a way to win. They're three at the best of their game, and they're just hard. I mean, look at Mahomes. He's like falling down an inch from the ground, and he gets off. I mean, no one else is physically capable of doing that. So it was an easy pick for me to pick the Chiefs ahead of at the start of the season. I don't like making preseason Super Bowl picks just because so much changes, but the Saints were my team. Just if I had to throw a team up, I mean, relying on Sean Payton, relying on Drew Brees, even though I knew that he was compromised, relying on Alvin Kamara, that strong Saints defense. I mean, if there was any team ahead of time to pick to go, I thought the Bucs were a trendy pick. I needed to see how Tom gelled. I was convinced that they would make the playoffs. I mean, they went 7-9 with Jameis Winston, YOLO, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. So if they could do that with him, I was convinced that they would make the playoffs. But obviously, I did not foresee a full Super Bowl run. As far as expert picks, it's hard to say. I feel like the Packers didn't get enough love coming off a 13-3 season. I actually believed that Rodgers would come back, and I actually said this a number of times on my show, that if there's anybody in the NFL that takes a slight and turns it into the greatest motivation, it's Aaron Rodgers. So drafting Jordan Love in the first round, Everybody was just not high on Green Bay, even though they were 13-3, but they got crushed by the 49ers in the NFC Championship game last season, and people just thought they would come down, and I didn't think so. I thought that they made the right moves, maybe not from a playmaker standpoint, because they didn't draft any wide receivers again for Rodgers, but I just felt like Rodgers would come back with man on the mission, figured he would be in the running for the MVP, figured he would be in the running for All-Pro, and he achieved both of those. So I would say that was one of the biggest misses by most of the experts, is they just didn't buy into the Packers. When I'm like, no, this is Aaron Rodgers. LaFleur, you know, late NFC Championship game play calling aside, the job that LaFleur has done in two seasons, I think it's overshadowed simply because he has Rodgers, but he's been an NFL coach for two seasons, and the guy has gone 13-3 in each of those first two seasons and led his team to the NFC Championship in each of those first two seasons. That's quite a resume. So I believe that they would have a strong season. I thought the Saints would be better top to bottom, but I thought that the Packers would kind of be right there behind them.
Oh, all right. Very good. Yeah, I think that... you know, I'm right there with you. I think a lot of people undersold the Packers, and I think that it's funny because at the beginning of our preseason episode, I mentioned that if Aaron Rodgers was in true like FU mode, that you'd see something special, and that's pretty much what ended up happening. He, you know, and who knows, like the receivers that they had really came into form, and so I think what made a lot of sense. But I also kind of it's funny because I think that I applied to the Packers in that they got blown out by the 49ers and you know, they didn't make a lot of big moves in the draft or the offseason. I also applied that a little bit to the Bucks and Brady, because Brady had a really disastrous playoff game in his last game with the Patriots. And I thought, okay, he's going to be a bit of a novelty down in Tampa, and maybe they'll make a run. I mean, I think I predicted them to make the playoffs, but I never really like thought that they would, when push came to shove, that they would be a team to be reckoned with. And I think they came together right at the right time. So I didn't predict them to go far. And I was right there with you. I picked the Chiefs. I can't remember who I almost always pick the Seahawks, only because I've been watching them. I'm up here in the Seattle area, and I've been watching them for so long. And Russell Wilson just seems to be an unstoppable force. Though, to be sure, this year the veneer is off. But in any case, I have a hard time picturing any team beating them, just like where I would put money down to say that they won't come out on top. You know what I mean? And so, anyway, you know, it's certainly when they started the season, it looked that way. And I probably would have still picked them, but you know, then everything kind of fell apart. So it was very interesting to me to sort of watch the different teams kind of, you know, just with all the twists and turns that happened over the season, whether it was the significant injuries that we saw happen, or all the COVID kind of craziness that came up, you know, that part was like interesting to watch. But at the end of the day, it did seem like consistent. The teams that were consistently good did rise to the top. And it was just a matter of, you know, I think the Bucks really just put it together right at the end, in the same way that you see sort of a lot of these other teams that have like gone on a run that nobody predicted, whether it was the Giants in, you know, their 2007 to the 2011 seasons, or the Ravens or whatever it is. They just put it all together just at the right time, and they get a few breaks their way. And that's kind of how it comes out. You know, I think that like, that when you talk about preseason predictions for winning the Super Bowl or even the championship games of each conference, you know, there is, you can't discount the luck that does go into it. You know what I mean? And so the fact that you had the Chiefs coming out on top, you know, you were, you know, one game away, and who knows, an Eric Fisher injury might have put you over the top, and you've been right on it. So 2 years in a row, it's a tough prediction. If you want to make a prediction right now, bet against the Bucks, even though I won't, but bet against him, because two in a row is very
I will not bet against Tom Brady. I have learned my lesson too many times as a Dolphins fan who had to deal with him for two decades. I can't stand Tom Brady, but man, is he just on another level. I don't care how old he is, I won't bet against him anymore. I want to bring up a couple points. One, I want to mention one where the experts got it wrong in the other direction. There was the Lions. I don't know if you remember, the Lions were a trendy preseason pick.
Stafford
had been injured the year before. They felt that they had these weapons. They drafted a young stud rookie running back in DeAndre Swift, Kenny Galladay, TJ Hawkinson going into his second season. They just, their biggest problem in 2019 was their secondary, and they drafted Jeff Okuda out of Ohio State with their third overall pick. So there was just this sentiment that Matt Patricia's got to get it together this season. I didn't buy into it at all. I never thought Patricia was the right coach there. I thought they would have a good offense, but I thought that defense was just dreadful. I didn't really think they did enough to address it. They had too many bit players like New England, but Belichick found a way to make that work. Patricia couldn't make that work. They didn't have any stud pass rushers. They didn't have any great linebackers, and they dealt Darius Slay, their only decent member of the secondary, and brought in a rookie and just expect him to jump right in right away. So I didn't buy that. But the second thing I want to mention is here's a spot where I personally can grow when it comes to analyzing teams. And it has to do with you mentioning the Russell Wilson thing. So the reason I picked the Chiefs all year, and I said this, was because of Patrick Mahomes. And the reason you said you picked the Seahawks, understandably, is because of Russell Wilson. But we saw the pitfalls of a bad offensive line and what it can do to even the best of quarterbacks with Seattle before the Super Bowl. What happened to Russell Wilson towards the end of the season when that bad offensive line just got more beat up and dominated by some of these defensive lines? What we saw in the playoffs against the Rams defensive front, how Aaron Donald and the rest of that Rams line just made Russell Wilson play one of the worst games of his career. And I don't think that was Russell Wilson all of a sudden becoming a bad quarterback. I thought that was Russell Wilson not having any time to throw the ball, constantly having pressure in his face. And he had two great weapons. You can't even say that. You know, when you got Lockett and Metcalf, you've got great weapons to throw to. He had no time. And I think I just underestimated Mahomes' ability as a quarterback to overcome all that. But seeing what the Bucs' defensive line did to that Chiefs' offensive line, it has to start in the trenches. Brady, as great as he was, and I just said, don't bet against Brady. But if Brady had a bad offensive line, he wilts in pressure now. He's not the Brady who could slide in the pocket when he was in his 20s and 30s. You notice the one sack the Chiefs got, the second they got a hand on him, he went right to the ground. You know, so that was the difference, is that the Bucs offensive line, there's luck involved because you got to stay healthy, right? That Bucs offensive line not only was great, they really hit at right tackle by moving up and drafting Tristan Wirfs. So they had a talented, but they also had a healthy offensive line. So the fact that no matter how good of a quarterback you have, what I'm going to pay more attention to is what is the status of their offensive line? Is it at least serviceable or is it in shambles? Because if it's in shambles, I don't care how good you are, that quarterback is going to have issues. So that's my personal growth for the 2021 season.
Well, good. I mean, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I would be very interested to follow along to see sort of what you learn in terms of being able to evaluate an offensive line. You know, I look at it as a continuity question. You know, I've always wondered whether it would make more sense from a personnel standpoint to draft players that are maybe not from a top tier university, but have some years together. So like if you have an offensive line that plays particularly well from a college and drafting, trading down to draft two sort of B+ players instead of like your A offensive lineman. It's always been like a kind of an idea, but these guys are professionals, so you never know. But in any case, I definitely agree with you. I'm reaching a little bit back here, but the Seahawks traded away their center after their loss to the Patriots for Jimmy Graham, and they never went back to the Super Bowl. I don't even think they've gone back to the conference championship game for that matter. And, you know, who knows? Like, you just break up an offensive line. I just feel like there's so much, like, there are so many moving parts to an offensive line, and losing any kind of cohesive unit can, I think, be real problematic. So that's really great. I think that's a great point. I certainly would say that if you have an offensive line that is struggling, you never know. Like, the Patriots, meanwhile, have had a history of just being able to slot new guys in. So maybe it's more a question of, like, looking back and who are the coaches that are really good at generating quality out of their offensive line.
So I was going to bring up that exact point. So the longtime offensive line coach for the Patriots, Dante Scarnecchi, retired, I believe, before this season. Maybe it was 2 years ago. And you saw a decrease in the offense. And the Patriots have never had those stud, like, all-pro left tackles, right, whatever, but they've always had good offensive line play. So I think coaching played a big part in that, and you saw the decrease after Scarnecchi retired. So yes, you got to get there's a chemistry aspect to it, not just having the physical skills, but knowing the amount of communication that goes in an offensive line, the amount of, you got to know who's going to block who when your defensive line is stunting. For instance, the Bucs did a lot of stunting against the Chiefs, where they would have a defensive tackle and a defensive end lined up, and then they would switch, and that's where the stunt is, in the middle of a play where the end comes in, the tackle mm-hmm. goes around, and you've got these inexperienced, overwhelmed offensive linemen who just had no idea who to pick up. So there were some plays where the Bucs defensive line barely even got touched. Some of them, they were just out physicaling and just pushing the back. And some of them, the offensive line just looked like a deer in headlights. They didn't know who to get because they weren't properly prepared. They didn't communicate with the rest of the line around them. And they just got dominated as a result.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. I think that, you know, what I'd love to hear, Brian, is that, you know, as you get it, we get closer to the start of the season, just have you come back on and you could talk about, you know, who you think is like has the best, you know, maybe the best offensive lines, like top to bottom going into the next
season. Sure, I'd love
to. So let me take that as a transition point. So the 2021 season is behind us. What are you kind of looking forward to?
2020.
From the 2020. Well, yeah, 20. Is it? I forget.
The Super Bowl is in 2021, but it's the 2020 season. So, yeah.
Okay. I think I had that reversed. I always thought that the season. Okay. So the 2020 season is behind us. So in any case, so looking ahead to 2021, and we can start with your Dolphins to be sure, but like, what are you looking forward to? There's obviously been a lot of drama with the trades and with still Deshaun Watson out there, coaching changes, all those things. But in, you know, broad strokes, like, what are you looking forward to and what are you keeping an eye on going into the 2021 season?
Well, I'd love to start with my Dolphins. Obviously, that's where most of my love covering the whole NFL, but obviously I have a particular passion for Miami. I want to see what Tua is able to do in year two. There's a lot of talk, mm-hmm. a lot of misplaced lack of faith in a rookie quarterback who's only played 9 games, because you've had some rare rookie seasons recently. Joe Burrow earlier this year before he got injured, Justin Herbert, where they're just lighting it up. Baker Mayfield mm-hmm. a couple years ago, where he actually set the rookie pass touchdown. And so people have come to expect that. But they don't realize that a lot of these rookies, they need growing pains. It doesn't mean that they won't be mm-hmm. successful. Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions his rookie season. Was somebody right. going to give up on the future Hall of Famer and two-time Super Bowl winner, multiple MVP Peyton Manning, because he threw nearly 30 interceptions as a rookie? No. It's because he was figuring out the speed of the game, figuring out how to read NFL defenses, figuring out what NFL open looks like, because it's completely different than college. Tua is a great example, but he had multiple first round picks as wide receivers when he was playing for that Alabama team. So where these, they would have 3 to 5 yards of separation. There was no question that these guys are open. In the NFL, you're playing against much tougher competition. You have to learn to anticipate. You have to learn to understand that the way the route is designed versus the leverage of the cornerback, to where if you have that leverage, you throw the ball and expect your receiver to turn around and get it. You don't wait for them to get open. That's not really a thing in the NFL, or it's not common. So I want to see progression on that front. He made some fantastic throws. He was very safe with the ball until that last game against Buffalo, where he tried a little bit too hard. He only had 2 mm-hmm. interceptions in his previous 8 starts.
Wow, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, he finished with 5 because he threw 3 against Buffalo, but he had 2 interceptions. One of them was a tip. His first ever interception was against the Chiefs, and it was a tip ball. So if you figure 1 interception that was his fault in 8 starts, and that's, to me, that's promising. I would rather a quarterback who understands how to take care of the ball and just needs to learn to be a little bit more aggressive and read the defense a little bit better and know when to throw the ball, as opposed to somebody who's just slinging it all over the place, throwing Drew Locke, for instance, throwing interceptions left and right, because you know what? That's going to cost your team more. If you have a great defense, which that Dolphins team does, protect the ball, learn how to read your receivers, get some better playmakers in there. They've got the number 3 overall pick. Either they'll trade back a little bit, or they'll stick there and get one of these playmakers like Jamar Chase out of LSU, like Devontae Smith out of Alabama, and just see if he's able to make that jump. So that's the biggest excitement I have. Flores has done a phenomenal job. No one can say he hasn't coached above his talent level. Just winning 5 games in 2019 with one of the worst rosters in recent NFL history, with all the talent they got rid of, knocking the Patriots off in week 17, that was an incredible accomplishment. And a lot of Dolphins fans were upset that the Dolphins didn't make the playoffs, but nobody was really expecting that to start the season. We were going to be happy to get to 8-8, but because they showed so much success, Dolphins fans got a little ahead of themselves. They still finished 10-6. They were still in the AFC East hunt.
Oh, sorry. I docked you guys a win. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. They were still in the AFC East race until week 15. I mean, the Bills were always going to win it, but the point is, we were technically in contention until just 3 weeks left to go in the NFL season. So that's the biggest thing. Does Tua make the jump that we hope he does? Does he build on the flashes that he showed in his rookie season? Because that's what you really should want in a rookie quarterback, is to build on the flashes. So as a whole, I'm curious to see Justin Herbert. I flat out got that one wrong. I'm not saying I didn't think he had, he's one of those. And Josh Allen, very similar, but in different reasons. So Josh Allen is just physical freak, right? He's got a freaking cannon for an arm. He played quarterback at Wyoming. His completion percentage in college was in the 50s. I mean, this is a guy who you're purely betting on physical traits, but that has very rarely worked out in the NFL. It's just not something that you'd rather get somebody who has the right. Look at Tom Brady. He didn't have the physical traits, but he had the smarts. He was very confident. He was an insanely hard worker. His ability to process was off the charts. So he built up the physical skills, where somebody who's just purely physical specimen, but doesn't have the accuracy or the, it's just hard to teach that kind of stuff. Josh Allen was an exception to that. I did not see his growth coming. And I didn't think Herbert would be so good right away. There was talks about Herbert's lack of leadership, his lack of kind of savvy and energy in the huddle, and that he was just a kind of a quiet guy. But it, at the end of the day, it didn't matter. He's got amazing physical skills. He's very bright. There were no questions about his level of intelligence just in general, and he was able to translate that to the NFL game. So I'm eager to see the development of those guys. Burrow, I think, was what everybody thought he would be. He clearly was ready for the NFL. He clearly was ready to read NFL defenses, and I'm just excited to see his growth. So there's, I think the thing I'm most excited about is, as we talk about quarterbacks, is that we're seeing the changing of the guard. Drew Brees is almost surely set to retire. Philip Rivers recently announced his retirement. There's questions about whether Ben Roethlisberger is going to come back. I think he might, but even if he does, he's got one more season left in him.
I think that's right.
Tom Brady is just a freak of nature, but he's still 43. I mean, even if he plays to 45 like he wants, that means in the next couple seasons we will have a Brady-less NFL. So you've got all these young rookie quarterbacks, young quarterbacks that are just now developing. And this rookie quarterback class, there's a lot of mocks that have five quarterbacks going in the first round, four, and some of them have four for the first four picks. So you're talking pick one, pick two, pick three, pick four, all quarterbacks. If somebody trades, because Miami won't take a quarterback, but somebody could trade up to number three. Teams like Carolina, there's been lots of reports that they're hungry to get a difference making quarterback. Detroit, obviously, I don't think they view Jared Goff as the future of their franchise. I think they got a lot of draft capital to take on Goff's contract. They view him as a bridge quarterback, and they're going to be looking for the quarterback of the future. I think Atlanta at number four. I think, you know, with this new coaching regime, new GM regime, that they're going to be looking to start over from the Matt Ryan era. Not right away. If you can bring in a rookie to groom behind Matt Ryan, I mean, there's not many worse situations to be behind as a young quarterback learning the game. So I think that's one of the things I'm most excited about is the amount of turnover we're going to see in the quarterback ranks. We haven't even talked about all the trade talks. Carson Wentz, Russell Wilson, apparently, Deshaun Watson. There's craziness. This is going to be the most intriguing offseason, specifically when it comes to quarterbacks. So I'm excited not only to see that, but to see the development of the next generation of NFL quarterbacks in 2021.
Okay, well, I mean, wow, that's quite a mouthful. But if you don't mind, I'm gonna go back just a little bit.
Sure.
So the Bills are certainly, just to keep focus on your AFC East for just a moment. So the Bills are certainly the team to beat in the AFC East. I would say the Dolphins are right behind them, most likely. I do expect the Bills to come back a little bit, because I think that, like you, I was surprised at Josh Allen's growth. But at the same time, I think so the rest of the league was as well. And I would be surprised, you know, the tail of the tape for them will be whether they are able to continue to develop, or whether the league catches up to them. But the framework that the Dolphins have, I think, certainly puts them in position to be ahead of the Patriots, because I don't know where the Patriots are going to be. Is Cam Newton still the quarterback there? If he is, you know, what's he going to be like? And then who do they get otherwise?
I don't think Cam will be in New England. I think Bill Belichick is not going to want to keep Cam around.
I tend to agree with you, but, you know, who else are they going to have? Because Jared Stidham is not the solution.
No, I think this could be the year they draft a quarterback. You know, they're sitting at 15. There's talk about Mac Jones. Mac Jones, quarterback of Alabama. Nick Saban and his Belichick ties. So I think that could be the way they go. And there's going to be a number of free agents quarterbacks out there. We don't know Jameis Winston's future. Do they go with Winston or Taysom Hill in New Orleans? There's just a lot of this intrigue. There's been talks of trade for Sam Darnold. Do the Jets get rid of him and try to draft a quarterback at number two? This is what makes it exciting. There's so many things that we do not yet know about the 2021 season.
Right, 100%. I'm trying to. I'm totally blanking on who the Jets hired as their new head
Robert
coach.
Robert Saleh.
Right, that's right. Okay, so there you go. So that was going to be my other question. Is that the Jets, I think, are a bit of a wild card in the AFC East, because keep Darnold or not, I think I'd like to think that Darnold is a serviceable quarterback. He's had flashes of solid performances in the past. So I am kind of curious to know, like, where you think they're gonna that division will kind of shake out.
Well, I think that specifically we'll start with the Jets. I think what they should do is keep Darnold and either draft a stud. You've got Penei Sewell, stud offensive tackle at that number two spot, or more likely the Jets have a lot of holes. Move back, trade that number two pick, move back a few spots, get even more. They have two first round picks this year and next year, thanks to the Jamal Adams trade to Seattle. So they've got draft capital. They've got holes all across the board. So the last thing you want to do is start to rebuild a quarterback. Sam Darnold, sorry, was a top, 10 pick for a reason. So he's got the physical skills, maybe with a new regime. Adam Gase doesn't do anyone any favors when it comes to quarterback development. Look at what Ryan Tannehill did once he was traded to Tennessee after he got out from under Gase.
Yeah, right.
So I think you do what you can to build around Darnold. He's got the physical skills. The mental side is what I'm worried about. He's had some years where maybe his confidence is shaken, but he's got the physical skills, whole new coaching regime, get him some weapons. He desperately needs playmakers to throw to, upgrade that defense. The defense wasn't as awful as I thought it would be, but they need a running back. They need wide receivers. They need better protection up front for Darnold or whoever the quarterback was. So I'd like to see them give Darnold a shot with this new offense, with this new head coach, and use all the assets they have to build around him. With regards to the Patriots, like I said, I don't think that Belichick keeps Cam around. I also agree Jared Stidham is not the answer. Belichick hasn't had a rookie to work with since Brady that he really tried to develop. They drafted Jimmy G, and then they traded him to the Niners. They drafted Jacoby Brissett, and then they traded him to Indianapolis. They haven't had that since Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe back in 2001. So there's a lot of questions now that Brady went to Tampa Bay and won. Was it really Brady or was it Belichick? Who is the mastermind there? So I think Belichick's pride is going to make him want to try this one more time. It's going to make him want to bring in a rookie quarterback and say, hey, no, I'm the one who made Tom what he is. Let me show you. I'll do it again. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go in that direction where they draft a rookie, try to build around him, and that Bill tries to create his dynasty 2.0. And Buffalo, I think they're there to stay. I hate to say it. It's going to be tough seeing them fight with Miami, but I was a little bit of a skeptic with Josh Allen this year, mainly because of how he played in the playoff game last year against the Texans, where they had the lead and they blew it. He showed all the problems with Josh Allen was that he was so inconsistent. He'd had games where he'd light it up, and he'd had games where he'd miss receivers by 5 yards, where he'd fumbled 2 to 3 times a game. And those are just things you don't tend to see fixed. And as he lit it up to start this season, it was putting up MVP numbers. I still said, as I watched these games, he's still missing 4 or 5 throws a game where he's just way off accuracy-wise. But the point is, it stops mattering. Yeah, he throws a few passes where he's 6 yards ahead of a guy in a deep ball, but he wasn't throwing interceptions. He was just misthrowing on deep balls, and he was making such incredible plays. Adding Stephon Diggs was such a huge get for them, having that kind of stud wide receiver. I think that's one of the reasons Herbert did so well. When you have a Keenan Allen, who's just one of the best route runners in the NFL and he can get open for you, it really relieves the stress of a rookie quarterback. So getting Diggs was one of the best trades in recent memory in the NFL for both teams because of what Minnesota landed in Justin Jefferson. So yeah, I think they're there to stay. I think that Sean McDermott has proven himself to be a great coach, has proven himself to be a great defensive coach. So I do think the problems with that defense will get fixed. Leslie Frazier sticking around as the defensive coordinator. They need a running back. Singletary hasn't been the stud they hoped he would. Zach Moss, good bit player, but not kind of a take over the game running back. So they need to get maybe another weapon for Allen. They need to upgrade at running back and upgrade on the defensive line. And yeah, I think Buffalo and Miami are the two teams that will be competing for the AFC East in 2021.
All right. Well, I bet we could talk you could talk our ears off about all the divisions, yeah. But we're kind of coming up against the time limit here. So let me ask just real broadly, like, do you see any other shakeups in divisions for the 2021 season? And certainly we're not holding you to it. Nothing set in stone, but just your initial read on any divisions that you feel like might see some turnover.
Turnover is hard. I'm really curious to see how Stafford does in LA. I think they have so many pieces in place already because they've got maybe not top 10 playmakers, but Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp if he stays healthy, Tyler Higbee. They've got weapons. Cam Akers really came on at the end of the year, so they've got offensive weapons. They have a solid offensive line, especially if Andrew Whitworth, who's turning 40, by the way, if he comes back and plays another season. That's a very, they were definitely a top 10 offensive line, but then you've got Aaron Donald, who is still far and away the best player period in the NFL, as far as just such a difference maker at his position. Jalen Ramsey, one of the best corners in the league. You had a number of other players who really came. Leonard Floyd played well from a pass first perspective. Of course, it helps when Aaron Donald's getting like triple teamed on half the plays.
But they were
the number one defense in the NFL this year. So you've got a great defense. You've got playmakers. You've got a strong offensive line, and you just upgraded a quarterback. Nobody's saying Matt Stafford is a top five quarterback, but I think most people won't bat an eye to say he could be considered a top 10, and no one considers Jared Goff a top 10. So it may not be night and day, but it's a clear upgrade at quarterback. And I don't know that it's a flip-flop because they did make the playoffs this year, but it could be a flip-flop in the fact that they have gone from a borderline playoff team who had to fight to make it in week 17 versus a possible Super Bowl contender. And then Sean McVay being the great coach that he is, the offensive play caller that he is, I wouldn't be surprised if I'm gun to my head making a pick this early in the NFC. I'm kind of curious to see if the Rams can make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, and I fully agree with all those. Certainly, I'm intrigued to see, you know, this drama with Russell Wilson in Seattle is kind of nuts to think about, like how he's, you know, basically making noise about getting completely destroyed behind the line, you know, every week in and week out.
He's not wrong.
You know, I think that, no, that's right. But just to kind of do a quick cycle around the rest of the divisions in the NFC anyway, I don't see the North changing hands right now.
No.
You know, the Detroit certainly didn't get better. Minnesota, I think, is staying where they are. I mean, we'll see, obviously. And Chicago, although there's some talk about Chicago with Carson Wentz, so that'll certainly be intriguing to see. I'm not sure that that's going to make that much of a difference when you got Aaron Rodgers in the division, though. Like, Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem to show any indication of slowing
down. I agree. I think that's the Packers division to lose. What's interesting in that division is what you pointed out, and that's the intrigue. So I'm intrigued to see how Dan Campbell does in Detroit. I thought he's never been a coordinator, but he was an interim head coach for Miami back, I think it was 2016, before they hired Gase. And he's a great motivator, and he's made some great hires as far as his coordinators in Detroit. They've got a lot of draft capital, although most of the capital starts next season, not this season. Jared Goff is certainly serviceable. They've got weapons. We talked earlier about Detroit. So that's intriguing. I want to see what happens in the Dan Campbell era. I think the Bears will be looking for a new quarterback. Allen Robinson is a free agent, and it's all reports seem to say that he's not going to come back to Chicago. So that's the intrigue for the North there. But yes, I think that's the Packers division to lose. I think the Vikings are going to be steady and in the mix, but the Packers are still the better team.
Yep. All right, cool. And then just to stop down in the South, you know, it's going to be Tampa's division to lose there as well, I'd say.
Yeah, especially without Drew Brees. They have a great defense. New Orleans is not going to fall to a 4-12 team. They're going to be competitive. But we saw what happened when they didn't have Brees in. Taysom Hill won some games, but it was not as dominant of a performance. And there were some iffy games where he made some plays, but didn't look at, like, I don't think he's the future of the quarterback there. They say they believe in Jameis Winston, but we've seen Jameis before. Like, he's not a mystery. Right. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. The Panthers are a team to watch depending on who they get at quarterback. So there's a lot of talk about Carolina going hard for Deshaun Watson. Where they're willing to throw the assets that Houston might be requiring. They're willing to throw a whole bunch of draft picks. Matt Rhule, I think, overachieved in his first season as head coach there. Really got a roster that didn't have a ton of talent to play above its means. They've got some playmakers on offense with Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. Robbie Anderson had a great season moving from the Jets to Carolina. Their defense played surprisingly well. They had a defensive rookie of the year candidate and Jeremy Chinn. Brian Burns, who went to my school, Florida State, has really shown to be a pretty strong pass rusher. So I'm curious to see who they get there. Atlanta, like, intrigue. Do they move on from Matt Ryan now? They can't really move on from his contract, but do they draft his successor? That's interesting to watch. Yeah. I do think it's the Bucs' division to lose. I still think the Saints will be the team that give them the biggest competition. Brady has to fall off at some point. I'm not going to bet when that is anymore, but it has to happen. But until we see otherwise, that's Tampa Bay's division to lose.
All right. And any thoughts on the NFC East while we're here?
Now, that's a fun one. I think clearly, once again, the quarterback picture in Washington is the big question. They actually just signed Taylor Heinicke. So good for him. They signed him for two years. So he will be playing football for the Washington football team. Real quick note, I really want them to keep the name football team. I do not. Most football fans have grown used to it. Not only grown used to it, but grown fond of it. The fact that there's a team called the football team is amazing. They showed a lot of promise. They had a top five defense this year, and it's a young defense. That line is full of first round picks. Chase Young, defensive rookie of the year. You've got J.D. McKissic and Antonio Gibson, who actually proved to be a pretty decent backfield. I think Terry McLaurin could be a top 10 wide receiver with the right quarterback. So really, that's the piece that's missing, is maybe shore up the offensive line a little bit and get a quarterback, either a rookie or a veteran, to come in. Now, they were in play for Stafford. I actually heard that they made a better offer than Detroit did, or than L.A. did for Stafford, but it just made more sense to send him to L.A. for contract purposes. So Washington, if they upgrade a quarterback, that could be interesting. What happens in Philadelphia? We heard that Doug Peterson got fired because they wanted him to work with Carson Wentz. They wanted Wentz to be the starter. They being Howie Roseman, the GM, and Jeff Lurie, the owner, had kind of backed behind Wentz, despite how awful he was this season. But now, all of a sudden, the rumors are, oh, they're going to trade him. Which one is it? Either you want Peterson or you want... get it, but they brought in Nick Sirianni as head coach, which is a huge question mark. And the few Eagles fans I've talked to are livid and just furious at that pick. It's like they wanted Frank Reich, or they back, and they couldn't get Frank Reich, so they go, oh, this guy was on Frank Reich's staff. Let me get him. But he didn't call plays. Reich called the plays in Indianapolis. So intrigue there. Do they go with Jalen Hurts? Do they draft a quarterback? Do they go for one of these veterans? All depends on if they trade Wentz and the capital they get back for that. The Giants, we'll have to say, I think Judge did a great job. Another coach who I think did above his talent level with the roster that he had. I don't know that Daniel Jones is the future of that franchise, but he has shown enough to at least you get the right reference. Saquon's going to come back. You know, he's still Saquon Barkley, still Saquon Barkley. So that'll be interesting to see. Yeah. And then we got the Cowboys, the Dak Prescott fiasco, and the fact that they still haven't signed him to a long-term extension. But Jerry Jones is on the record saying that they want Dak to be their quarterback. Sure. But this is a division that had a 7-9 team go to the playoffs. So that's intriguing just from a chaos perspective. Like, we have no idea how the NFC East is going to shake out next year, but that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that. So let's do a quick trip across the other side of the league. So I'll give you my take on the AFC West. I did want to mention one quick thing. I did notice a lot of parallels. Like, these are, when I say a lot, I mean like two or three, between the Raiders lost to the Bucks in 2003 and the Chiefs lost to the Bucks in 2020 or 2021. So the difference being that, or the consistency being that you had an MVP level quarterback that got basically completely destroyed by a faulty offensive line. And then the next season, that quarterback just was never the same. And that was the one that stood out the most to me. And I thought, boy, it really would be very interesting to see how Mahomes bounces back, because even though Rich Gannon was coming off an MVP season, he was just never the same because he just never trusted his offensive line ever again. So I like you, Brian, I would never bet against Patrick Mahomes until I see for sure that they are actually like not the team, that he's not the player that he once was. But so I would still pick the Chiefs to come out on top. The Chargers are certainly a team to watch. I optimistically think that you could get three playoff teams out of the AFC West next year. But I'm being optimistic because it's going to take a lot for the Raiders to put a defense together that keeps their opponents under 24 points a game or whatever it ends up being. So that to me is like the biggest question mark. I don't see the Broncos doing much of anything. It looks like they're not moving on from Drew Lock, and I don't think Drew Lock has shown to be a consistently good quarterback. The Broncos were hamstrung a little bit by injuries. They lost Cortland Sutton midway through the season, and that really hurt them. But I still probably put it as Chiefs. I'm going to be pessimistic and put the Chargers second, and then the Raiders third. But I still think that's the Chiefs division to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. It's bad offensive line due to mainly injuries is what failed Mahomes, but he's still Mahomes. They still have Tyreek Hill, who maybe not the best pound for pound receiver, but the most dangerous weapon in the NFL. And then you have Travis Kelce coming off a historic season for tight ends where he was just basically unstoppable. Even in this game, he was really the only thing that was working for the Chiefs against the Bucs defense was Travis Kelce. That's so hard to match up against. With regards to the Raiders, there's some intrigue there. Obviously their defense was dreadful, and that's where they need to fix most of their problems. But there's talk of Gruden may want to move on from Carr. Maybe Mariota gets dealt if there's one of these quarterback hungry teams. So that could be intrigue. The offense really isn't the issue in Vegas, though. It is, almost said Oakland. I got it. I caught myself. Yeah. Las Vegas.
You get like a 2-year grace period.
Yeah, but I've adjusted. I just mentally I caught myself, but I called myself out on it.
Yeah.
But it's the defense that, right? They couldn't stop anybody in the run or the pass, really. So that's where they have, obviously, they brought in a new defensive coordinator. That's where they have to focus on their side of the ball. Denver's interesting. I think they could be more of a contender if they move on from Locke. They move on from Locke.
Interesting.
I am not a believer in Drew Lock. I actually compared him earlier to Tua. What I don't like about him is he takes too many chances, makes too many bad decisions. He's got some physical skills, but he doesn't seem to be able to read defense as well. So he had games where he'd have three touchdowns and 300 yards, and then he'd have a game where he'd throw four interceptions and completely sink any chance they had of winning the game. But the Broncos are, especially when they get Sutton back, they're littered with weapons. You think about Jerry Jeudy, and he had some drop issues, but he's an incredible route runner. KJ Hamler, he's a nice deep threat. Cortland Sutton have the talent to be a top 10 wide receiver in the league. Noah Fant could be a top 5 tight end in the league. Melvin Gordon is certainly not the worst running back you could have. So they've got a lot of toys to play with. If you get a better quarterback in there to use them, their defense is certainly serviceable. I think they'll move on from Von Miller. They actually save a lot of money by cutting him. And with the new offseason, off the field issues they're having with him, with all the accusations, I think it might be time to move on there. But you still have Bradley Chubb. You still have Justin Simmons. You know, he's a free agent, but I think they'll bring him back. So you have some pieces on that defense. Vic Fangio is a great defensive coach. I think quarterback is the big missing piece. So what do they do at quarterback? If they stick with Locke, Elway's still in the building. He may not be the GM technically, but he has overriding decisions. If he wants to stick with Locke, I think that's a problem. And then the Chargers. I mean, nobody saw Herbert's rookie season coming. They're bringing in a new coaching staff. So that's the big question mark. Was the success due to, and Anthony Lynn had all sorts of problems as a head coach, especially when it came to late time game play calling and late time decisions. But there's no debating that Herbert had a fantastic and historical rookie season. He got Offensive Rookie of the Year. But does bringing in a whole new staff, Brandon Staley is a defensive-minded coach. He did a phenomenal job in L.A., but he's a defensive-minded coach. What happens with Herbert's development? Keenan Allen, obviously, is I think, a top-five receiver as far as his pure route running and hands. Austin Eckler, get him back nice and healthy. Mike Williams is a great number two. Hunter Henry is a free agent. Do they bring him back? He certainly has talent, but he's had some health issues. And you've got a lot of studs on that defense. If Derwin James stays healthy, with Joey Bosa on that line, Melvin Ingram, and a defensive-minded coach, that Chargers team could be dangerous. So, yeah, I'm actually going to agree with your order. I think if I had to pick an order now, Chiefs, but the Chargers could maybe give them a little bit of a run, certainly could make a playoff run. And the Raiders could be in the mix if they shore up that defense, and the Broncos could even be in the mix if they get a better quarterback.
All right. Well, thanks very much for that. So let's take a quick trip around the rest of the division. So what do you think about the AFC North? Is Baltimore still the team? Or you think Cleveland's going to overtake them this year?
Now, that is one of the toughest things to call right now. I think what Stefanski did with that Cleveland team was astounding. I mean, the team literally hadn't been to the playoffs in what, 24, 25 years? Hadn't won a playoff game in long. Yeah, the last playoff game they won was when Bill Belichick was their coach, so in the 90s.
Right,
so that,
right.
That kind of tells you where things are. So the fact that Stefanski not only got them into the playoffs, but they were able to absolutely dismantle Pittsburgh in that opening round playoff game. I think things are only looking up. If they stick with their formula, they've got two stud running backs, and what a system, and a great offensive line to run that. But what do they do with OBJ? I think that once Baker got comfortable in that play action offense, that's what suits him best. He's not a Mahomes. He's not somebody who's going to create these amazing plays, but he can actually be very accurate. Baker was known for his accuracy coming out of college. If you've got a defense that's focusing on Nick Chubb and focusing on Kareem Hunt, to where they can make that play action effective. Jarvis Landry's a free agent. Do they bring him back? He's another one who's just a great route runner and great with the ball and making defenders miss and making big plays out of short passes. They need more weapons. I don't think OBJ comes back, even if he did. He's actually been more of a liability. They actually played better after he got injured. There was more gelling on that team. There was more, you know, Baker seemed to be more comfortable in not having to force feed Odell Beckham. The defense is really the issue there. They've got Myles Garrett, who's one of the top defensive players in the league. But they have a lot of other problems, especially in the secondary, and they really had problems stopping the pass this year. We saw that against Kansas City. Not that, I mean, most teams have trouble stopping Kansas City, but there was no chance when Kansas City got the ball back. They just couldn't stop them, and all Kansas City had to do was just pepper Travis Kelce with passes and then call that fourth down play, and then Cleveland never got the ball back after they punted. Baltimore is interesting. I really like Lamar Jackson. People are up and down, but he's such a unique player that you have to game plan for. And when he is on, I mean, that team still, Baltimore, people don't think about this because they started slow and Lamar had COVID, but Baltimore actually finished the season with the highest point differential of any team in the NFL. It wasn't the Chiefs. It wasn't any of these other high-flying offenses. It was the Baltimore Ravens because their defense was phenomenal and their offense really started to come along towards the end of the year. So you still got Lamar Jackson. You know, they're going to move on from Mark Ingram, but he wasn't playing towards the end of the year either. You got J.K. Dobbins is going to be going to end his second year. Mark Andrews will still be back, also a top five tight end. So you've got a great defense. You got playmakers. I don't know if I'm going to pick one or the other. Baltimore's the more complete team because of their defense. But maybe Cleveland shores up their defense in the offseason. But it's neck and neck between those two. I think Pittsburgh is due for a fall off. I think their defense is phenomenal. Yeah. But Big Ben, either he comes back and he just wasn't good in the end of the year. They had no run game. I think Juju moves on. So I think they'll need to rebuild at quarterback and rebuild that offense. I think Cincinnati will be fun, but they're still a couple years away from competing.
Yeah, that sounds right. And the AFC South, though, is really up in the air as well. We covered the East, so we'll skip them. But any thoughts on how the South shakes out?
Well, so it'll be interesting because Arthur Smith was the offensive coordinator. So he's the one who helped develop that Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill offense. And now he is in Atlanta. So we'll have to see if that affects their play calling there. Their defense really was a liability, especially the pass rush. So Tennessee will need to really focus on that pass rush. I think, once again, big question is quarterback, but Indianapolis is the team to beat in that division. Ownership, Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, believes they are a quarterback away from being Super Bowl contenders. What that tells me is Indianapolis is not going to draft, or they could, but they're really trying to target a veteran. They have a very good defense. They've got a really great running game, especially with Jonathan Taylor coming on at the end of the year. They've got T.Y. Hilton, who, when he's healthy, is at least a top 15 wide receiver. Michael Pittman really came on. They've got some solid tight ends. They've got a very good offensive line. And we talked about how important that is. So they really seem to have a lot of the pieces you need. Darius Leonard is probably one of the top 5 to 10 defensive players in the whole NFL. So yeah, they really are just missing a quarterback. If they can bring in a veteran, they could be the team to beat, not only in that division, but possibly, making a run at the AFC title.
Boy, Carson Wentz there would be actually a really interesting pairing, wouldn't it, with Frank Reich?
And that's honestly the only spot I think makes sense for him. I understand that Chicago's in play for him, but Wentz's issue right now is his confidence. His talent isn't any different, but his accuracy got worse. He was trying to make too many plays, taking too many sacks, fumbling the ball a lot. He got worse and worse as the season went on. He is just mentally shot. So going in a system where he would be comfortable, like Indianapolis, working in that Frank Reich offense, who was his offensive coordinator when he was an MVP candidate back in 2017, that's the only place I think can salvage his career. And yes, if they bring in Wentz and they're able to fix him mentally, that Colts team could be very dangerous and could be competing for that AFC championship. And then you got the Jaguars are going to, I'm quickly going to mention Jacksonville just because they got the, they got the number one pick. They've got Urban Meyer, who is one of the most accomplished college coaches of all time. They're going to have Trevor Lawrence, who's one of the best prospects to come out at quarterback, at least since Andrew Luck. They've got a ton of draft capital, you know, by trading away Jalen Ramsey. So they've got lots of cap space. They can bring in free agents. They can bring in a stud rookie quarterback. They can make some plays. What I'm not saying they're going to compete, but they're going to be fun to watch. Who's left? Who did I not do in the South?
No, that's well. We didn't touch on the Texans. That was the last team.
That mess speaks for itself. But, we don't need to talk about Houston.
Exactly. Like what is there even to say? Because there's so much. I mean, you talk about like you have no idea what's going to happen there. So
their long time team president stepped down today. That's a sinking ship that is doing nothing but going down.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining me on the Stakeout Sports Podcast. This was just so much fun, and your knowledge is bar none, top notch. So, well, take another euphemism and apply it. But in any case, thank you so much for joining me. And you know, we hope that we'll get you back in before the start of the season. We can talk about where things have shaken out, and we can make sure we have an idea about what the Pigskin Party podcast is doing. But in any case, why don't you remind everybody how they can find you? You know, all the different places that people can follow.
Yeah, first of all, thanks again for having me, Chris. You know, I could talk NFL all day long. Absolutely going to have you back on the show in the off season as well. If you want to find Pigskin Party Podcast, we're everywhere you can find podcasts. We're on YouTube. We are now a YouTube show as well. Have my you know, not so pretty visage out there for the masses. I'm big in Twitter, so you can actually follow us at Official PP Pod. That's actually where I spend a lot of my time on social media. But we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok. I mean, you name it, we're out there. So just Pigskin Party Podcast, and we'd love to hear from you.
Okay, yeah, I can vouch. The PP Podcast is a dynamite follow on Twitter, so definitely check that out. So, all right, well, Brian, thank you so much again. Best of luck during the off season, and we'll talk to you next season.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right, thank you.